Labor Day weekend, close out summer, football right around the corner, big college football weekend, highlighted by a couple games, LSU-Clemson obviously being one of them, and then the big one tomorrow night between Ohio State and Texas, and NFL football, amazingly enough, gets going in 6 days. Bayside we go. It's Mark. It's the fan. What's going on, Mark?
Oh, hi, Mark. How you doing today?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Great. I got, since you were talking about Boggs earlier, I got a couple of great stories. I met Gay Paul way back when I worked in Macy's going to college in 77, and I also met Steinbrenner once. I'd like to tell you real quickly what happened. I met Gay Paul. I worked for Macy's at the time, and a woman comes up to me at the counter. So she said, so I said, gee, is that the Yankee interlocking NY? It was NY with diamonds. It looked beautiful. She says, oh, you must know my husband. I almost fainted. It was Gay Paul walks up to the counter. He says, are you going to Yankee Stadium in the spring? I said, I was at the game when Chambliss hit the home run. This is in January of 77. So I said, yes, I was at that game. I'm a big fan. And he says, just keep on coming. I was in shock. Now, Steinbrenner, I had a girlfriend named Barbara, and she says, Mark, I'd like to get into the stadium club. Yeah. This is in 1990. She says, could you ask that man if you could go in? That's George Steinbrenner. He's the owner of the Yankees. He's not going to let me in. I'm not even wearing a sports jacket. You know, back then you had to wear a jacket to go into the stadium club. So I went up to George. I said, George, my girlfriend would like to walk around in the club. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, actually, would you let me go in? He says, well, listen, now how many games do you go to a year? I go to about 15, 20 games a year. So I tell you what, you go in, look around. I said, I don't have a sports jacket. Hey, don't worry about it. Just go in, walk around, enjoy yourself, have a great time. I love fans like you. You can go in and enjoy yourself.
Okay.
And I thought that was incredible. So I just wanted to share that with you.
That's cool that he got into the club. You know, I didn't, yeah. When I was working stock at Sears, I never ran into anybody. I gotta be honest with you. Loaded a lot of TVs, a lot of air conditioners. At one point in time, somebody bought a snowblower. It wasn't Mike, but somebody bought a snowblower in Nanuet, New York, and had to load that into the car. What was amazing when, just because it, I didn't have the pleasure of meeting Gay Paul, but that's cool when you're working at Macy's. But it always, the people that always, when I was working stock, and you get the call and get the ticket, they always came with a car that could never fit the item that they bought. And they'd want you to basically lasso it down with a lot of rope in order to make sure that they could get it home. That was always the thing. It wasn't like they came with like a flatbed truck or anything like that. It was like, you know, they buy a, you know, in those times it was not the flat screen TVs. I'm dating myself. Like the TVs were like 450 pounds. And you have to lift them up, put the back brace on, put into the car, hopefully not snap off the antenna, and then get the rope out. But when I was working at Sears, then really, I mean, I met a lot of nice people, just nobody of influence like Gay Paul, or nobody, general manager did not walk in looking to get, you know, a new TV or something. Anyway, BT and Sal Show on the Fan, brought to you by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. Jay in New Jersey is up next to the Fan. What's going on, Jay?
What's up, Moose? How are you, pal?
I'm doing well, Jay. I'm chatting with you. It's a Friday. We're in New York. All is well, man. How's North Jersey?
Everything's doing good. Just to touch a little football, where maybe come at this at a different angle, and maybe this is more of a Tiki question when he comes on, but signing contracts and doing everything, maybe a way to go at this in the future with all these dramas that you see is that it's just a straight-up four-year deal. Doesn't matter if you're first-rounder, second-rounder. Then if you talk with your team in that fourth year and do a new deal, that's fine. If not, they're allowed to franchise you only 1 year, because you got these people that don't want to play on their final year of their contract. When contracts become meaningless, then what do we have a contract for? That's what I'm always, my mind boggles when these guys want to sit out. And I get it. They're protecting themselves. But if you sign a contract and you outperform your contract and you can't, you're trying to negotiate, you know, you still got to play on your contract. Like, if not, and you can't come to an agreement, what is the initial contract for then? It just always boggles my mind.
I get it, but usually it happens in the final year of whatever the deal is, when a player is superseding expectations or the player has the leverage. And whenever the player has the leverage, they're going to go out there and try and use it. It's a barbaric sport. Next play could be your last play. Micah Parsons goes out there and, you know, has a, you know, tears every ligament in his knee and is done for the year. And when he comes back, he's no longer necessarily going to be the same player that he once was, right? So it's a depreciated asset. So players also go into it realizing that that is the case as well, right? The longevity, the length of their career, they're looking to, you know, financially make as much as they possibly can as quickly as they can, especially when they're a player of impact. So you could look at it that way, and you could say, well, if you sign your name to a contract, what's the use of it? Or you can look at it from a player's perspective and say, well, when I have leverage and I'm going to be able to use that leverage because I'm going to try and maximize my value because my ability to go out there and make money is not as long as the owner's is.
No, agreed with what you're saying. But, you know, when you sit with people and you're talking stuff out and you don't agree on something, you know, then it comes to the point of, then what are 50 years involved with first rounders? Then the whole collective bargaining has to change. And then, hey, you want that 18th game? Well, we want 1 year only on franchising. Or we want four-year deals in the beginning when you get drafted. Like, you got to kind of prevent this because this is just always going to happen. And it's just drama that just, it could be avoided. But it always happens, especially I'm a Cowboy guy. But you know what? This price of today was not the price a year ago, Jerry Jones. And if you're not willing to pay this, then move on from the player and don't bring out the drama. Like, that's the bottom line of all of this. And for Giant fans, guess what? He moves on. And I can guarantee you, Cowboys won't be sweeping the Giants anymore. There's chance. And that's what it is. So all the Giant guys that kill me.
You're a team, right? You know? But that's where your organization's got to have a little bit of vision as well to kind of get ahead of it and not create the headache or the drama that we saw down in Dallas. And listen, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I'm not necessarily buying everything that Mike has had to say, and I'm not necessarily buying everything that Stephen and Jerry Jones had to say. We'll see, I'm sure, more reporting on the fracturing of that relationship. A lot of people believe that something had to have gone wrong that led to the emotional decision by the Cowboys to move on from really one of the great pass rushers in the NFL, Eric in Long Island's up next on the Fan. But that's to the, you know, to the smiles of the New York Giants. What's going on, Eric?
Listen, just like the last caller, I'm one of the people that no one wants to hear from normally all year, the New York-based Dallas Cowboys fan. And here's where I disagree. I think, as wrong as he was, I think Jerry Jones, this is what I don't understand, had all the leverage. He was not a free agent. There was one more year on his deal than 2 years of franchise. He had 3 years of Micah Parsons at value dollar, and there's nothing Micah could have done about it. Let me ask you, if there's no trade here, if this trade never happens, how does this play out? Micah plays 3 years with the Cowboys. He's not going to sit out and not make $75, $80 million. I don't understand what the incentive was for the Cowboys to do this deal. Jerry Jones had the leverage here, not Micah Parsons.
Unless they felt like it was going to be too big of a headache to deal with. Yeah, listen, you can look at it that way as well. Mike is not going to sit out. He's not going to be out. You know, what
kind of 3 years.
No, Eric, what kind of issue is that going to be in the locker room? What kind of issue is that going to be on a day-in, day-out basis? What issue is that going to be in terms of when Mike is hopping on and doing his podcast? What kind of negative, you know, is he going to, even as great as he is it not going to be worth the headache because we're going to have to be dealing with all of these other storylines that come along with it, with him not being a happy camper, being a Dallas Cowboy because I haven't paid him yet and giving them that financial security. Like, that comes into it, too. But you could have played hardball. Listen, the story came out yesterday that, you know, there was a last-ditch effort by Micah and his representative, and Jerry Jones basically told him, which he confirmed last night, which was, you know, you're playing under the 50-year deal. See you on the field.
It's crazy to me. I think that if there was no deal done, I don't think Micah would have not tried. I think for 3 years, for his teammates, he would have busted his tail. He would have played football. He wouldn't have gone out there and said, well, I'm not tackling him. For 3 years, you still would have had the best defensive player in football at bargain dollars. At bargain dollars for 3 years, there was no need to trade this guy. There was no need.
Well, the Cowboys differ, and they want to stop the run. So Kenny Clark's going to go out there and help him stop the run. Matt in Stanford's up next in the Fan. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, buddy. So, you know, I've been listening, driving down the Merritt Park Lake, losing my tires as we go, basically. And, you know, again, I think the Cowboy fan, I thought they'd be a lot more angrier. But in all fairness, like, I think, you know what? They got two first-rounders. They got Kenny Clark. I don't believe he's a generational talent. A good buddy of mine who's a Northern New Jersey Cowboy fan, I heard his take earlier today. He doesn't really, he's like, hey, look, he's never played well in the big games. He's not Lawrence Taylor. So, I mean, look at it this way. They got 2-1s. They didn't give him what he wanted. Goodbye. And again, at the end of the day, I look at them as they still have a great offensive team. They're still going to, you know, with Lamb and even Pickens, Ferguson, you know, and Dak, again, he's playing with something to prove. So the NFL now, it comes down to offense. That's really what it comes down to. So, I'm not hurting for them. As a Giant fan.
Well, as a Giant fan, Matt, you shouldn't be hurting for the Cowboys. Should be celebrating.
Yeah, I'm not hurting for the Cowboys. Hey, look, at the end of the day, we got to contend with the Washington Redskins. We got to contend with the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, look, as long as Howie Roseman is still there, they're going to, I mean, again, that guy knows what he's doing. And until we figure it out this year, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. So,
well,
again,
the Giants got to worry. Matt, I get it's an offensive-driven league. There are still premium positions when you're looking at defense. Corner and edge rushers, and the Cowboys moved on from one of them. So you can look at Kenny Clark and say, well, I love the 2 first-round draft choices. We don't have to allocate the finances. Dallas is going to be A-OK. They're going to be able to score points. Don't necessarily love the running back room. Do like Blue, the running back out of Texas, and think he's got speed as long as he stays healthy. He had a little bit of a hamstring injury during training camp. Offensive line, not nearly what it once was. Cowboys better score a lot of points this year. Kevin in Jersey Shore is up next in the fan. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, Moose. Thanks for taking my call. I think we have a friend in common, Huey from St. Louis.
Yes.
And his brother, Pat. They always... Yes. I speak to them occasionally. They're great sports fans. They always speak very highly of you.
No, he is great. And when you talk to, I haven't talked to you in a while. When you talk to him next, Kevin, send him my best, all right?
Absolutely. You know, I tell you, he used to call Mike and the Mad Dog. They would treat him as like a scheduled guest. It was incredible the respect they gave him.
I would screen those calls, no doubt. Huey in St. Louis, absolutely.
a comment and a question. If you talk about Wade Boggs, as a Met fan, I know this is from a Met perspective, but I'll always view Wade Boggs as a Red Sox. Sorry, I don't care how many horses you rode around Yankee Stadium. He'll always be a Red Sox, and that's that. My question to you about football is, it's all great about Micah Parsons, but as a Giants fan, I'm very worried about Andrew Thomas. It doesn't look like he's going to start the season. And if he doesn't, Russell Wilson better look out. Your thoughts on that, Moose? Thanks for taking my call. And appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about Thomas as well. I mean, I think he's the key to the offensive line. That's it. End of sentence. Period. End of sentence. End of paragraph. End of chapter. Move on from there. I mean, that's what you necessarily, when you look at Andrew Thomas and what he can provide along that offensive line, there's not another giant offensive lineman in the room that can do what he can do at the left tackle position. So I would agree with you. And if he's not there, that offensive line is significantly weakened. Anthony Piscataway up next to the fan. What's going on, Anthony?
What's going on, Moose? Thank you for taking my call. I'm not gonna lie, I have some hot takes for you right now.
Hot takes.
Yeah, man, yo, I'm telling you. So, okay. So I see a lot of similarities between the NBA and the NFL, right? Because same thing, Dallas. They get rid of Luka Doncic and everyone's like, what are you doing? They draft Cooper Flagg and all of a sudden everyone's like, wait, Dallas is now a contender. If AD can stay healthy, Kyrie. So I'm looking at Micah, they get rid of him, yeah, but it's a gamble. It's kind of long-term investment. And they can maybe flip it around, and all of a sudden, Dallas is back in, right? I don't think it was a terrible, terrible trade. It kind of all relies on the gamble. And this is the really, really hot take.
Back in with what? The Mavericks won a lottery. And Pete, correct me if I'm wrong. I think they had a 1.5% chance of winning that lottery, I believe it was. There's no NFL draft lottery. So what are we back in for?
But I think if Dallas... I'm not thinking Archie Manning because, again, I don't know if he's going to leave that first year at Texas or anything, but even if they could pick up, like, a good quarterback, because Dak is a great quarterback, but I just don't think he fits Dallas. I've seen him go up and down, but no, I'm okay, Dad. And then, but real hot take is the Giants now have Dallas not to worry about as much, right? And we have seen a Giants team that went wild card. No one saw too much of them. And granted, I was 8 years old when this happened, so my memory may not serve me right. But no one was really worried about the Giants. They come into wild card. They beat Atlanta. Forgot who they played next. And then they beat a San Francisco team that everyone thought everyone thought was going to make that Super Bowl. And then they go on to beat everyone thought an untouchable New England team.
They beat Dallas, Green Bay, and San Francisco.
Oh, Green Bay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Dad. So,
yeah.
What's your dad's name, since he's adding to the call? What's your dad's name?
Pedro. He's a diehard Giants fan.
Hello, Pedro.
Hello.
It's Moose.
Huh?
Moose?
Yeah.
What's going on?
But, yeah, I think that the Giants, if they can make wild card, that's a team no one wants to face. And I would not be surprised if they make a surprisingly deep run. You know, I think Giants fans have really, they've been through it. My dad goes through it every single week. But I would not be surprised if you see them winning, upsetting these great teams. I don't think Minnesota is, like, easily beating the Giants. I don't think Green Bay, depending on what version of Jordan Love, is easily beating the New York Giants. They have an identity on defense. And if Thomas could stay healthy, the Giants have more protection. Malik Nabers, he had an amazing
season. Half glass full. I get it. And you're right. I mean, the Giant fan has been through it a little bit. So I'm not as optimistic in terms of the Giants. And, you know, I think when you look at the NFC, you forgot the big team that's standing at the top of the mountain. That's the defending Super Bowl champs, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think the most interesting division is the NFC North, with you have now Parsons in Green Bay, even before that with the Packers, the Minnesota Vikings, which is McCarthy at quarterback, and obviously with the Detroit Lions, some regression along the offensive line, change of both coordinators and Glenn and Johnson both being gone. And now you have Ben Johnson, and what is he going to do year two now with Caleb Williams, year one as a head coach? Then you get to the NFC South, and it's obviously the Buccaneers division to lose. There's not many that believe in Raheem Morris and the Atlanta Falcons, even though they went out there and addressed in the NFL draft their defensive line or edge rush issues. And then you go out west to and it's really San Francisco when you look at their, even though there's been a regression of the roster, the schedule is very, very easy when you're looking at the San Francisco 49ers. The Rams, I think, end up, if Stafford can stay upright, stay healthy, I think the Rams are a decidedly more dangerous team. But is there a team that scares you? Well, I mean, Philadelphia would scare you. I mean, they would. Thomas has got to stay healthy. I appreciate the optimism, I think, from you and your dad, Anthony. I think you should be optimistic about where the Giants as an organization are and the steps they've taken this offseason and how this roster is probably the best roster under general manager Joe Shane that he's taken to the regular season. That's a positive. Results-oriented business, though, and it gets going in what? Today's Friday, 9 days against the Commanders. Ben Rice went 2-for-5 in the two-hole. Aaron Judge, 1-for-3 with 2 walks. And Cody Bellinger, 3-for-4 with a homer, a double, and a walk. Combined 6-of-12, 5 runs, 3 ribbies, a double, 1 home run, and 3 walks. There you have it. That's the meat of the order. When you're looking for the meat for your order, choose Boar's Head. Committed to craft since 1905 is... The Yankees had their way with the Chicago White Sox last night, putting up 12 hits. They scored 10 runs. Warren, good enough, overcoming the error early on in the game. And the concerns there, obviously, for the Yankees defensively with Volpe at shortstop and some of the other issues that we've seen with this team and really the overall sloppiness of the Yankees at times. But still, you know, the Yankees are 14 games over the 500 mark. They send Rodon to the mound later on tonight out in Chicago. And what you're really going to learn, it's not necessarily this series, not necessarily knocking around a White Sox team that right now is 38 games under 500, and they stink. It's really a case of when in the regular season, what you're going to learn about is the next 12 games after that for the New York Yankees. It's going to be when, you know, the schedule gets a little bit more difficult before the soft landing spot at the end when they take on the Twins, the Orioles, the White Sox, and then the Orioles to close it out. But 3 in Houston against the Astros, 3 at home against Toronto, 3 at home against Detroit, then 3 up in Fenway Park will take us to the middle part of the month of September as we're approaching or we're at Labor Day weekend. That's when you're going to learn a little bit of something. But ultimately, as we talked to John Morosi earlier in the program about an hour ago from Fox Sports and MLB Network, you know, it's a wide-open American League. So even though I might not be as bullish on the Yankees in 2025, especially from what I've seen so far in the regular season, all you need to do is go on a run in the month of October, and it's a wide-open American League. 888-808-1019. Totowa, New Jersey we go. It's Charlie. It's the fan. What's going on, Charlie?
Hey, Mark. Great show. First of all, I'm a huge Giant fan, so I'm kind of happy Mike is out of our division. But I think as far as Jerry goes, he could have got this done in March and got a much better deal. Something became personal with this somewhere along the way. I don't know what it was. I don't think it really was the money. Something terribly happened where they lost a great player. And a good friend of mine's a Dallas fan, and he's talking about, oh, yeah, but we got two first. He says, if Green Bay's plans come to fruition, their first-round picks in 26 and 27, they're going to be near the bottom anyway. It's not like you're getting a top five. You're talking about Arch Manning. I think it was a big mistake, and I just think somehow, some way, Mark, it got personal, and that was what the decision was based on. I think they were ready to do the money, but something happened.
Yeah, something. And, Charlie, I don't think you're wrong. You know, I heard Michael Irvin say something must have changed. There's some Cowboy fans that are celebrating, you know, the headache is gone, whatever it might be, or he didn't come through in the playoffs, the four playoff games, just one sack, or not as good as everyone thinks he's going to, thinks that Micah Parsons is. We've kind of run the full gamut. I don't think you make the argument today with any kind of sense of reality and make the argument that the Cowboys are better off for 2025 without Micah Parsons.
No, I agree.
And really, in the short term, that's all that matters. And here's the deal. The Green Bay Packers are making this move to try and win a Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're trying to do. And if the Packers win the Super Bowl, regardless of what those first-round draft choices turn out to be for the Dallas Cowboys, they win.
Yep. No, I agree with you, Mark. I mean, look what Cincy did. They put a Band-Aid on it with Hendricks. Why didn't you put a Band-Aid on it with him? Let's go back to the table. There's something that happened. And one last comment about my Giants. I'm just excited about the energy I see. The results, obviously, are yet to be seen. But unlike last year, I don't think I'm going to be turning the game off in the first quarter and saying, I can't watch this. I want them to be competitive. I want him to show progress, and I have hopes for a successful season and Jackson Dart.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie, I think those are realistic expectations. I think they are. And, you know, the Bengals did what they needed to do with Hendrickson because, I mean, they need him because the defense stinks. And they're going to score a lot of points with Burrow, Higgins, and obviously Jamar Chase. But the question is, can the Cincinnati Bengals, even with a new defensive coordinator and Al Golden, are they going to be able to stop anybody? And that remains to be seen. But you can answer that question a little bit more positively with Trey Hendrickson part of the role or part of the solution on defense in 2025. Chip in Delaware is up next to the fan. What's going on, Chip?
Hey, Moose. What's going on?
How you doing, man?
All right. Thanks. So I think the best thing for the Giants fans is that the Mets and or Yankees have deep runs in October. Because I think this thought of the Giants having this massive turnaround season and we're winning all these more games and we're making a wild card and making a deep run in the playoffs.
That was one caller, Chip. I've never said that.
They're out of their minds.
Yeah, I've never echoed those sentiments. I never talked about the Giants making the playoffs. I thought
not you. Just the call after call that are like, oh yeah, we're gonna have a turnaround season and we're gonna make the wild card. And these people are delusional.
Chip, you know what? You know what? But Chip, I'll let you continue. I'm not gonna cut you off, right? I'll let you continue to make your point. You know what that is? The Giant fan is hopeful.
Oh, right, absolutely.
You know what's refreshing? We know what's refreshing, especially, you know, we're not debating Daniel Jones on a day-in, day-out basis.
Oh, well, thank God for that.
You know, that's refreshing, is it not? That right. We're talking about the Giants are going to have an identity on defense. That they've got a quarterback, a young quarterback in Jackson Dart that looked the part, yes, in the preseason, but has looked the part. You've got a coach
and maybe he's got his moxie back a little bit.
The Giant fan has been in the darkness for a while here. You know, outside of three years ago.
Right?
So if the Giant fan wants to be happy, hopeful, Labor Day weekend, feel good about themselves, even facing a daunting schedule, you know, I'm all for it. You know, because I do think, as I mentioned going into the last break, I do think this is the best roster that Joe Shane has put out on the field. Now, what does that equate to? We'll find out together during the course of the regular season.
Right. Yep. Yeah. 3 years ago, right? The wild card, the win over Minnesota. You know, take that aside. The last 8 years, the best record this team has seen is 6-10, right?
Yeah.
And I understand we made the wild card 3 years ago, beat Minnesota, a bad Minnesota team. That team finished the season, our last 10 games, 3-6-1. That record is more representative of what that team was than the first, you know, the 6-1 start. And the constant theme over the last 8 years has been offensive line play. And we continue to not improve the offensive line. And I don't understand why people think there's going to be different results.
Well, I think, Chip, I do think when an offensive line stays together, I do think you start to yield better results. Now, you can question the talent level of this offensive line. Look at Runyon at one of the guards, Smits at one of the center, Luminor at the right tackle position if Andrew Thomas is healthy playing left tackle. I think there are guys on the offensive line that can get it done. Like Thomas, when he's healthy, is a premier left tackle in the National Football League. The question you have is whether or not he is healthy. So is this the best offensive line in the NFL? No. Is it the worst offensive line when you're looking at personnel in the NFL? No. Can they be middle of the road? Yeah, I think if Thomas is healthy, I think they can be middle of the road. If they're middle of the road, can they operate offensively? That's like the big question you have to ask yourself as you're, whatever you're doing on this holiday weekend, can the offensive line go out there and be good enough to where I can operate an offense? And I think if things work out well, that they could be good enough to operate an offense.
Right, and the defense has to be better than they were last year because the offense can be good, but if the defense is on, or the defense can be good, and but if they're on the field for 75% of the game,
yeah, then they're going to get exhausted. They're human beings. It's not played by robots. Yeah, then they're going to get worn down. Yeah. Chip, I don't disagree. I think there is, and this is not waxing poetic. This is not drinking the Kool-Aid, putting the giant underwear on. There is talent on that defense to be excited about. There just is. Lawrence Burns, Carter, Thibodeau, Okereke, Holland, Paulson Adebo, like there's guys on that's real, that's legit, that you can look at and say to yourself, yeah, I think this Giant defense is going to be pretty good. But as you mentioned, Chip, and do love the name Chip because it's my dog's name, not insulting you, but it's a great name. I think there's a reason that all three phases need to work together. That's why coaches talk about it. So the offense got to go out there and do their job, have sustained drives, be able to score points. Not like they need to score 35 points a game in order to win games, but the defense can't be on the field for an eternity and get exhausted.
Call of the day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
And that was one of the best teams I've ever played on.
The 94 Yankees.
The 94 Yankees.
Because Mattingly was still healthy at that time.
Right. And we were just killing people. And scoring runs like crazy, and the pitching was off the chart. And then we made the run in 95, and Donnie got to the playoffs. And I think Donnie hit 487 in the playoffs that year. And we're in Seattle after we lost. And he looks over and goes, Boggsy, I'm retiring. I said, Cap, you can't retire. I said, this is insane. I said, we finally got to the playoffs, and you hit 487, and he said, no, he said, I'm done. And we started crying, and it was an emotional plane flight back to New York. And then he called and made it official that I'm retiring. And I went, wow. I said, how are we going to replace Don Mattingly?
Yeah, there you have it. That's Wade Boggs. Road to Cooperstown. Jack Morrissey joined us, new podcast and series coming out talking to Hall of Famers that had amazing baseball careers, obviously, and punched their ticket to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Yeah, 94, August 12th, 1994. That's when the season came to an end. The Yankees had the best record in the American League. Pete, who had the best record in the National League? August 12th.
The Montreal Expos.
Boom. Good job, Hoff. There you have it. Sharp as a tack. The Montreal Expos had the best record in the National League. So, and I think there's a lot of Yankee fans that grew up in that era when Mattingly was, you know, the hitman that had the poster up on their wall that would love to have seen Don Mattingly win a World Series. Unfortunately, he did not. And I'm sure that was an emotional flight back. Good stuff there from Boggsy. Manhattan, we go. It's Ralph. What's going on, Ralph?
Don't you tell me you're dying your hair. Are you dying your hair? I turn on the radio.
See, this is like a game of telephone. I said I dyed my hair. I'm not. My hair is turning gray from the stressors of life, right? I haven't lost it, right? So,
yes.
But I dyed my hair once when I was at SNY. It had to be about, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago now. Maybe a little, I don't know. I forget what it was. I dyed my hair once, walked into the SNY newsroom, and I believe it was, it was Kirk Jimenez at the time, who was an anchor at SNY. I sat down, saw me, and said, nice dye job. And I said, no, I didn't dye my job. He goes, yes, you did. I go, does it look that bad? He goes, does it look that obvious? He's like, yes. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate it.
So wait a minute now. Hold on now. You denied it. You said no. And then obviously you did.
Initially I did. But then, and that initial denial lasted maybe about 20 seconds. But then I felt, you did not necessarily feel comfortable because people then are just looking at your hair. It's like, and I'm not. It's like seeing a guy that's in his 70s and all of a sudden he's got jet black hair or brown hair and there's not a gray hair.
Here's the thing. Once in a while I have to dye my hair for a part, for a role. Once in a while when I get a little thing going.
Yeah.
So the last time I did that, somebody turned to me and said, you look older with that hair. I see people under the misapprehension, Mark, that if you dye your hair, you're going to look younger. But that's not the case. Well, George, I don't want to get on this too much because I want to talk about the Wade Boggs, but George Clooney is the prime example. Handsome guy, but he dyed his hair for a part recently on Broadway, and he looks 10 years older with the dyed hair.
I got you. Unfortunately, I don't look like George Clooney. That's the issue.
Well, we can't all be... We can't all be that lucky,
Right, exactly. I understand. No. You know what bothers me, just as we're on this subject? What bothers me when you see somebody that has, and I can't grow facial hair either. Like I did one point, and I tried a couple years ago, looked terrible. Donna hated it. Did it like when I was like in my 20s. My wife, my mom at the time told me that, I looked awful. I looked like somebody that should be, goat herding. So I looked terrible. So she's
mothers will say that.
Yeah. So she was brutally honest. And I appreciate the honesty rather than telling me something that's not true. But you know what bothers me when people have, jet black hair or darker hair, not a stitch of gray on top, yet their facial hair is like gray. And then they're trying to tell you that one has nothing to do with the other. Well, if your facial hair has hints of gray, how does your hair on top not have any gray whatsoever?
You know who's sporting that look? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, is that
check
true?
Him out recent. Check him out recently. He got a snow white beard, Mark, and he's got hair some funny reddish brown. It's terrible. If I knew him personally, I'd give him advice, but I don't. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about Boggs, who was tremendous. Here's a guy who can wake up in the middle of the night, as they used to say, and get a base hit. The Holy Trinity back in those days, Tony Gwynn, Wade Boggs, George Brett. There weren't three better hitters ever to be found in the last 50, 60, 70 years. These guys were fabulous. And I'll leave you with this. You know how average means nothing and how much Boggs was just reliant on his average. Everything was average, average, average. I say that average means a great deal. In the game where you fail 3 out of 10 times, if you could hit 350, 360, 370, and that's where these guys were, you are a phenomenal baseball player. The barometer they use now is flawed, Mark. Average means something. RBIs means something. These things meant something, and it still does, I think, Mark.
Well, yeah, and Ralph, I don't disagree with you. And we've seen the precipitous drop, the lack of average, the lack of balls in play, the lack of action that you've seen in Major League Baseball. I don't disagree. I think you can take it all into account. When you look at it, and you can, when you're grading out players, judging out players, whatever factor your organization wants to look at, whether it be on base, whether it be OPS, whether it be batting average, whether it be RBIs, the three known outcomes. I mean, we've heard it all, but I don't disagree. I mean, I think when you're minimizing the brilliance of guys like Boggs and Tony Gwynn and George Brett and what Mattingly was as a hitter. The ability to make contact and put the ball in play and to hit for high average. I think there should always be a place in Major League Baseball for that. And Boggs was one of the best I've ever seen. Deserved place in Cooperstown. Make sure to check out that podcast with Morosi. So tonight out in Queens, got a little excitement. And Hoff's going to be on tonight at 2 a.m. on WFAN, breaking it all down as well before he heads back. He's heading back to Eastchester in between, but he's going to be taking in Jonah Tong, making his debut tonight for the New York Mets as they take on the Miami Marlins. And we talked about the Met game last night. Yankee game, didn't really learn all that much. They knocked around the Chicago White Sox, hit some home runs. White Sox are terrible. But Rodon on the mound later on tonight for the Yankees. Jonah Tong making his debut tonight for the New York Mets. And we've seen the brilliance of Nolan McLain for the Mets in his three starts so far. 0.89 ERA. Tong emotional when he met with the media, talking about the fact of when he told his mom, or where you're going to be on Friday night, and said tears were... we were balling for a good hour. He deserves it. He's earned it. He's been brilliant in the minor leagues. But, Pete, let me ask you. You're going to be on tonight, yes, taking everyone through the overnight. What do you think Jonah Tong's pitching line is tonight? Mets, obviously, stepped back last night. Now trail the Phillies by 5 games in the National League East. 4 games up on the Cincinnati Reds for the third and final wild card spot in the National League. The Mets are going to be a playoff team. Just how dangerous, we'll find out together. Tong tonight looking to make an impression. What do you think he does tonight?
I'm not optimistic. I don't think you can pull off what Nolan McLain has done. So you're not going to beat, even though the first outing was 5 1/3, I still think it's going to be less than that. I think you're looking at 4 1/3. I think you're looking at 4 runs. And you're probably looking at maybe 5 Ks, but like 3 walks.
Now, as a veteran, talk show host, you've been working at this station for a while as well. When you look at it, disaster always plays better.
Yes.
There's no doubt. People love to react to negativity. Positivity doesn't always necessarily play. You're doing a show tonight. Are you rooting for Tong to pitch well? You're a big Met fan. Or are you looking for Tong to pitch poorly?
I want him to throw no-hitter. I want him to go out and ball out, because that will just add more energy to this team that was kind of looking for an identity a little bit.
I get it. I understand. Yeah. And in answer to the pitching rotation, you've heard a lot about him. He's getting an opportunity. It's not, you've watched a lot of bad starting pitching throughout the course of the year. You're looking for brilliance tonight, but you're rooting for brilliance. You don't think you're going to get it.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, McLain's been too good these first 3 games for Jonah Tong to come in here and hit anything that what McLain's done. And that's not just being like, I'll be the pessimist, because I just can't imagine the way it's gone for the Mets, he's not going to deliver.
Well, I think he's going to be good tonight. I don't think he's going to be McLain good. I'll go 6 innings, 2 runs allowed. I think he's going to be good. I think the Mets bounce back after a bad performance, and I think the Yankees will embarrass the White Sox yet again.